our listeners who joined us today on this podcast. Joining me is Dr. Alan Olson. Dr. Olson, welcome to this podcast.
Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
I like to have themes for each one of these podcasts. And so my theme today, Alan, is staring into the abyss. And I want to talk a little bit about that. And so each human being at one point or another stares into an abyss in front of them, the unknownness of their life, their circumstance. And you have an unusual perspective about that that we're going to talk about. But there's an analogy with COVID, right? The abyss of COVID that we have been living with for the last 18 months. And the abyss of contracting COVID, of the hundreds of thousands of deaths we've had. And even for those who choose to be unvaccinated, what does that conversation look like in their head? And for those who have been vaccinated, their calculation about the abyss is unique to them. And so, Dr. Olson, tell your story about staring into the abyss.
I had an opportunity. Isn't it crazy that I call it an opportunity to stare into the abyss? It's been 11 and a half years ago. In March, 11 and a half years ago, I went in for my colonoscopy at age 51. You know, you're supposed to do that at 50, right? Well, you know, I'm busy like everybody else, so I'm human. But after a couple weeks of maroon-colored stools and a hemoglobin of 8.5, it was time to have a colonoscopy. And as I came to afterwards, I always tell people that's the best nap you can ever have be put to sleep for a colonoscopy. But woke up enough to hear those words that you've got cancer. It's not necessarily, we don't have the biopsy report back, but that's what you got. If you want, we can do surgery now and get out of the way what's there, because it actually was causing some partial obstruction at that point in my life. So I was whisked off to Rice Hospital and had 18 centimeters of my colon removed and spent the next week in the hospital. My wife, God bless her, was in California at a meeting. We had made arrangements for my parents to drive me home afterwards. Well, that never happened, obviously, but she was able to get back that night. She was contacted and made it back that evening to the hospital. She was looking into the abyss too, Ken. So it wasn't just me. It was those around me, my family members, my kids who were in high school mostly at the time, middle school and high school at that time. Suddenly all of us looking into the abyss. And I remember being afraid, not so much for my own you know, what's going to happen to me. Clearly, you know, you worry about what's going to happen to me, but I was more worried about, gosh, what's going to happen to my kids and the things I'm going to miss. What am I going to miss if this takes me, if this thing does me in? I may not be able to see my kids graduate. I might not, you know, I might be gone before my parents are. You know, think of all those things, grandkids, you know, all the things that you're going to miss, and you just don't know where you're going. And then to have the oncologist come in the room and tell you that, well, yeah, you know, there were 2 or 3 out of 18 lymph nodes that had cancer in them. Well, okay, so they start talking numbers. You know, some doctors are really good at numbers. You know, and these oncologists start talking about, well, Olson, without chemo, there's a chance you're already cured. You know, without chemo, your 5-year survival would be, the way we look at it, about probably 4%. And with chemo, it's 50%. You know, well, gosh, I was hoping for, you know, better odds than that even. But so, you know, how do you make a decision like that? You do the best that you can with the information that you have at the time, right? You do the best you can. Looking back, in spite of looking into the abyss, one of the most amazing things of this experience was what happened in the community around me. I have never seen a hospital room with so many flowers in it. That week that I was there. And I have a sister-in-law that works in the food service at Rice Hospital. I have friends and colleagues that work there that stop to see me. People that I've never met before that were nurses or cleaned the room or whatever their job was that were treated me like a family member. The cards, the letters. When I got home, there were, and I don't remember the exact number. I just remember thinking it was a lot. There were at least 50 or 60 cards waiting for me when I got home in the mail, wishing me well. And some of those cards were people that I never met that I didn't know, but they heard about me and they heard about my story.
Yeah, this notion of family and community in staring into the abyss is an important context of why we go into healthcare, right? This notion of providing support to our patients and this notion of family and community, which I think has been so prominent, particularly in our rural areas, because we know everybody, right? You mentioned relatives at the hospital and friends and neighbors. And when you stare into the abyss, having a network of friends and relatives around you makes that look down, not easier, but a shared experience. And that's what I heard you describe, a shared experience.
You know, and we like to, in our culture work, we ask the question sometimes, how big a team are you playing on? You know, we get stuck in this notion of, well, it's my nurse and I, it's my nursing station colleagues, it's my department, it's Caris, it's Centricare. Well, no, my team was the community. That was the team that I was playing on. And that's the team that helped to support me. There was a fifth grade class in another city in Redwood County that sent me a care package because that's what they did. What an opportunity to teach our kids how to be a part of that team and that community. So it was a harrowing experience, but it was a opportunity to learn and grow and have a much better appreciation about the team. How big is the team we play on, and what can we do for our community, for each other, because we take care of each other. That's what we do. We rely on each other. I rely on being able to call John, the plumber, and know that when he's done fixing my water heater, it's not going to leak, and I'm not going to have a gas leak and a water leak, and I cannot be at home and nothing's going to be missing from my house. You know, we rely on those kind of relationships and interactions and trust. And maybe we can talk a little bit more about trusting relationships, because I think that's really an important part of this as well.
Let's go there. So I would finish this little segment, Alan, by saying that 11 years later, you were facing some odds, right? You talked about the odds that you heard from your oncologist. You stared into the abyss, and we're delighted you're still with us 11 years later. And so now when we take a look at our roles as leaders in our communities for healthcare, right? We are talking to our patients and our community about this thing we call COVID-19 that has been ravaging our country and the world for the last nearly 19 months now. So I want Dr. Olson to put your doctor hat on now and talk about the sense of community you feel and the sense of accountability that you feel as we talk in some respects about staring into the abyss and accountability and long-haul COVID and dying of COVID and getting sick from COVID. So how do you look at this, Alan?
You know, we like to talk about best practices and what we know from the science, what we can glean, and it's not perfect, but we know a lot, and we have to apply the knowledge that we know and take it in the context that we are today and apply what we know today to do the best that we can to take care of each other in our community. For right now, it becomes clear by the day, I think, that the best path to help us get through this is a vaccination, immunization, and what can we do? You know, we talk about, you brought up the word accountability, and we talk about accountability and the accountability ladder, and you know, wait and hope is not a good strategy. And we talk about those lower levels on the accountability ladder also as being powerless. And how can we become more accountability and be more powerful? What can I do and what can we do for ourselves and our communities to bring ourselves out of this? And it seems clear to most of us, I think, that are really in the trenches on this from a medical standpoint, that this seems to be the clear way to go. And I understand there's reservations about it, but I'll share another story with you. I went home early one day. Early was 5 o'clock, of course, so you're in the clinic early. Went home early one day. Loaded the kids up in the car. I said, well, Dad, where are we going? Well, we're going in to get flu shots. Oh, okay. Well, my youngest son, who I think was probably only 3 years old at the time, three or four. Well, his older siblings, his older brother and sister, kind of were, they were the whole way in, you know, oh, you know, you're going to get a needle in the arm. It's the needle's hurt. It's going to hurt. You're going to realize, it's, you know, it's a shot, man. You don't want to do this, you know, all the way in. Thank goodness we only live 5 minutes from the clinic. I could have gone on for longer than that. But he was okay. I mean, he's okay. Well, that's what we're going to do. But I think partly because he sat on my lap and I was his trusted source. So he's only 3 years old yet, so he still trusts the old man. I was his trusted person. I'm going to sit on Dad's lap. He got his shot. He looked at his brother and sister like, why did you get me so worked? I didn't even feel that. And it was amazing. And he's never had a problem with a shot since then. But I was his trusted source from that. And, you know, how much do we hear today? You know, how many people are, they're hearing the voices of the siblings or social media or whoever it is. And just take a minute and think about, does that make sense? And who can I talk to? Who is my trusted source that I can talk to? And what responsibility do we have in our role as healthcare resource for our communities? We need to have the accountability. We want to be that trusted source, and we want to have the integrity to walk the talk and to help educate. Doctor means teacher, after all. We need to help educate, and we need to listen to what the concerns are to get past it. There's a reason that we say listen first, then serve, guide, and heal, right? Listen. We need to listen and try to understand and hopefully be a trusted source for the folks that we work with and for the communities around us. I like to sometimes tell the story that when I was a kid, if one of us got hurt or had a fever, my mom didn't call the doctor. She called Gloria. Gloria lived across the street, and Gloria was a nurse. And so Gloria was the friend across the street, the trusted source in the neighborhood, and you talked to Gloria. And if Gloria said you go to the doctor, then you went to the doctor, okay? Well, everyone should have a Gloria in their life, right? And I like to be a Gloria for the people that I serve and have served in my community.
Boy, I just something, you know how when you listen to someone talk every once in a while, all of a sudden the synapses click, and I want to maybe unpack that a little bit with you, Alan, what I heard you say, because I hadn't thought about it this way before. So I'm going to go back to when your diagnosis of cancer was, right, 11 years ago. An oncologist, a trusted source said, you know, 50-50. And you chose to trust his advice in a situation where you were staring into the abyss. And now as we look at folks trying to make a good, educated decision about a vaccine for the worst pandemic in 100 years. The challenge has been that the trusted source that we want them to listen to has been replaced by other noises and influences that are not the trusted source that Alan sought out when you were staring into the abyss. Or even take all the patients that we see that have COVID and they trust us for their care. We're going to put you on a ventilator. We're going to give you remdesivir, monoclonal antibodies. So as a physician, talk about this notion of the trusted voice and how over the years, well, you're not exactly a young chicken anymore, Alan, but over the years, you have been a trusted voice for your community in so many different ways. And that's reflected in all the cards and well wishes you got. Talk about being a trusted voice in the community. How do we get there?
I think sometimes just being present, being involved. You know, most of us in small towns are involved, and we don't just go to work every day. We're involved. I mean, we're in the Lions Club, and we're doing everything else. We're volunteering. We're, you know, I do lighting tech for community theater. We get all these little involvements, and we make lots of connections, and we have lots of friends, and we share stories. And we learn from each other. I learned to trust my electrician and my plumber, like I mentioned before. I know that they're friends, they're trusted sources for me. I had I think she was probably at the time 14 or 15 year old last year that said, "Doc, you can't retire until you deliver my babies," because I delivered her. And she came to her point with her mom, and her mom is a trusted source for her. And I'm a trusted source for her because we've got that relationship. I'm a family doc, after all. That's what we like to say. We're the relationship specialists, right? We have long-term relationships with people that we develop over time because we believe very strongly in that, the power of that relationship to heal and to teach and to learn and to depend on, to understand that we can depend on each other when we need each other. You know, 9/11 anniversary is coming up this weekend, and we're blessed to have people like those firefighters that run into danger and face it head on. They face it head on. We're in a global crisis, and what are we doing and what can we do? We don't have to run into a burning fire to make a difference in this.
That trusted voice of experience, because I think the one thing that unites all of us is we want this pandemic to be over. And I think that all of us recognize that in order to achieve that objective, it requires, as you said, we don't have to run into a burning building, but we have to together be for something. And that's, let's be for ending this pandemic by getting a vaccine. I'd want to have you finish this conversation, Alan, but first of all, thank you for your time. Thank you for your leadership. This notion of trusted voice is extremely important in healthcare, isn't it? And so the final word is Dr. Olson's. And I've never asked this question before, Alan, and it's a tough one, but I will ask it anyway. There will be folks that are listening to this podcast who have a fundamentally different view on vaccination than you and I. And as we all know, when people feel firmly about something, asking them to change their mind, asking them to be curious and open to a different perspective, so that indeed we together can rally around defeating this virus. How does Alan, how does Gloria talk to somebody that just is on the other side of the fence, but we want them with us? They're our neighbors. They're our friends. They're even our relatives. So you get the last word.
I have close relatives that are anti-vax, and it's because of their source of information, which I think is not a good source of information, but they choose to believe that source. You know, everyone has reasons, whatever the reasons are. I will say there's a reason for everything, whether it's a good reason or a bad reason. There's a reason for everything, and people have their own perspective on the world, and they have their own way of hearing and listening or not, and that's how it is. That's okay. We're different, and that's okay. But I think if we could stop and think a little bit, and I hope that people can find a trusted source, and they may decide not to get vaccinated. And I don't want to see people leave our organization, because everyone on our team, everybody, is important to our mission to serve our community. And I don't want to see people go, but that may happen. And if they're not ready, that's okay. I think we have a responsibility to our community to practice the best medicine that we know how and to set that example. Who started this? Dr. Roski, I think. She was quoting from Hamilton, if I remember right. Another line from Hamilton is, history has its eyes on us, right? And I think this is our opportunity to be that trusted voice You know, whether people are staring into the abyss or not, we will be there. When you've got questions, when you're ready to consider something that you're not willing to do now, we're still going to be there. And we're still going to be there to take care of you, to answer your questions, and encourage you to be open to whatever you can do to do your part and for us to do our part to serve our community.
Again, thank you, Alan, for your time today. And as we kind of called this podcast Staring to the Abyss, you continually throughout this conversation reminded us that there is hope. And together, we act in hope as we want to defeat this pandemic. So, Dr. Olson, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for the service to the community. And give us 11 more years of great work. Thank you.